Welcome to Mission Critical, a podcast about the big picture, the purpose, and the values that drive today's most game-changing companies, entrepreneurs, and leaders. I'm your host, Lance Chung, Editor-in-Chief of Glory Media, and I'll be introducing you to a group of brilliant minds who are making an impact on the world and forging the path ahead. While they may all be very different from each other, the question remains the same. What's your mission? This episode is part of a larger series called Momentum, presented by Monogram Appliances, which aims to celebrate Asian leaders. Elevate your culinary domain with Monogram Luxury Appliances, where sophistication meets performance. Each piece is crafted for those who demand excellence. From precision-engineered ovens and cooktops with sapphire glass, to stunning refrigerator interiors that use aerospace technology, you can experience the art of cooking like never before. Monogram is redefining luxury in the kitchen. Visit monogram.ca and transform your kitchen into a statement of elegance and innovation.
Madeline, I'm so happy to have you here with us today. How are you?
I'm okay. I mean, I feel like this has been a long time coming. I've wanted to speak with you for so long.
Such a long time coming.
I know. I'm very honored to be here.
Thank you for joining us and taking the time. I know you're really busy as well. I've known you for like a few years, for sure.
At least a decade.
Yeah, I don't even remember how we even met, but just through the industry, I'm sure.
And people used to think we were cousins.
Yes,
or send us like packages that were like for you or for me.
This is true. I forgot about that.
I think he got my shoes once.
Yeah. But I mean, I've been able to see you grow your business, your platform over the years, and I'm so like proud, but also so like in awe of everything that you've built. And it's really like something that's just has, you know, built in purpose and impact. And it's really just been like so fantastic to see your whole journey throughout the years and everything that you're building.
Thank you so much. Well, you too. To see your growth too has been amazing.
So. Oh my gosh.
Look at us. We're just doing the thing.
We're just doing our thing. So today you're the founder of Represent Asian. Give me just like the elevator pitch of how you would describe the platform that you built.
I'd say that we're representing the Asian North American diaspora and the stuff that we care about.
And how important is it to really discern or communicate that you're talking about the diaspora of like multiple Asian communities versus what people might think of maybe just like the East Asian community or a specific part of it? Like how much has that been a part of how you communicate what you guys are working on?
I mean, it's a challenge. Asia is a huge continent with so many countries. And I think it also brings up the question of like, who actually does consider themselves Asian, right? Do Iranians consider themselves, would they call themselves Asian, or is it West Asian or Middle Eastern? People from India, do we say the South Asian or just Asian? So I think it's like a kind of a tricky thing to balance, but I want to try to be as inclusive as possible, recognizing that, of course, I have limitations as an East Asian woman, and there's only so much that I know about West Asia and South Asia and Southeast Asia. So it is a bit tough, and I think the platform, you know, definitely skews more East Asian simply because I am running it and I am East Asian, but I do try to incorporate, you know, the rest of Asia in there, but it is a challenge.
Yeah. And, you know, when you were, so how many years have you been running the platform for now?
Almost 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was there like, what really like led you to building the platform? Like, was it like an aha moment or just something that you really kind of started to build up slowly? And also, what were you doing beforehand?
So I worked as a journalist for many years. I was at HuffPost Canada as the style editor, and then I worked at Fashion as a digital editor and a bunch of different things. But I kind of had a quarter life crisis of like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. You know, as much as I love the fashion industry and the lifestyle industry, I was getting very sick of writing about celebrities, and it felt like it was a little bit too surface level for me at that point. And I understand that, you know, it's a great escape, and there's a lot that we can learn from fashion and how people dress too. There is, you know, not political, but deeper discourse around that. But I think just at that point in time, I was like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing, and I'd wanted to do that since I was 16, so I was really, really lost. So I had a little bit of a crisis, and then that's when I decided to just drop it and go back to school and learn music therapy. So I quit my job. I focused on going back to school. And then as I was doing that, I realized, okay, I still want to make money. So I'm going to freelance and start pitching. But a lot of the publications that I was pitching to, this is when I was really starting to write about identity. It was 2018, Crazy Rich Asians came out. I'd written an article about, you know, how it was more than just a movie to me. It did really, really well. So I was like, okay, here's how I can keep writing and feel like it's purposeful and that I'm making an impact and there's meaning to it. There's, you know, substance behind it. So I started pitching articles to publications that were basically talking about identity and from my point of view as a Chinese Canadian woman. And a lot of people told me that it was too niche for their audience. And I was like, huh, that says a lot about, you know, what traditional media thinks their, like, who they think their audience is. So.
And this was back in 2018. Okay.
Mm-hmm, 2018.
Which was not that long ago.
No, it wasn't. So, I mean, there were some publications that, you know, really did give me the opportunity. And I'm so grateful because I was able to kind of hone my voice and build that up. But, yeah, so then flash forward, I was back in school doing my first placement. I get home, I'm exhausted, and then all of a sudden just, like, a download came at, like, 12:30 in the morning, and I was like, I want to make my own thing. I want to do something that's, like, the platform or, like, the publication that I didn't have when I was younger. I want, like, an Instagram feed full of Asian faces of, like, Asian people doing cool things. I want a website, this, that. And then I was like, oh, my gosh, now it's 2 a.m. Like, all of these ideas, I'm writing them down. I thought of the name. I bought the domain name that night. I made, like, a really terrible logo on Canva. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And, you know, I am a person who gets excited and gets a lot of ideas, but I don't follow through with a lot of them. So this one, I was like, you know what? I think there's something here.
Mm.
So I reached out to a friend who was a graphic designer. I was like, look at my terrible logo. This needs to be better. Can you do something with this? I'll pay you. So that I was actually, like, you know, investing in it. So it would push me to kind of move forward with it.
Keeping yourself accountable.
Yeah. And then from there, it just kind of grew.
I did not realize that it was, like, this thing that you created, you pulled out of, you know, thin air in the middle of the night. I, you know, because a lot of these things, too, are, like, kind of, like, some people are kind of, like, mull it over and think about it for a little while, and it just kind of evolves over time. But this was, I didn't realize, just kind of, like, was kind of like an aha moment for you.
It was, like, all I can say is a download. Like, that's the best thing. It literally just started coming into my brain, and I was like, okay, this is what I'm doing.
Right. What did you, I mean, based off of your experiences and also, I guess, being literally told that the perspectives and the pitches that you were putting forward were too niche, what was the gap that you really saw that could be filled in terms of the storytelling and the perspectives that was not being addressed at the time or considered, you know, not a part of the mainstream?
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, when we look at traditional newsrooms, especially back in the day, it's definitely more diverse now, but it was typically white. You know this, I know this. When I was working at HuffPost, I was actually very lucky that I was in a diverse newsroom. And I think that's when I really learned the importance of, you know, seeing different perspectives and catering content to different types of people. So I remember my managing editor, Lisa Young, even when I was putting together, like, a slideshow of winter coats, you know, your SEO headline winter coat slideshow, she was like, make sure that you include images or products that are for different sizes, right? Because when you think about it, typically people just put straight size products, straight size images. So she really kind of opened my mind to, huh, like, we, media is so not inclusive in terms of what we put out there, who they cater to. They cater to a specific type of person. And if you're not that person, then you have to become that person or, you know, you're not worthy or good enough. So I think I just realized the other thing, too, was anytime I did write from my perspective, I felt the need to over-explain it, like, as if I was still writing for that audience that, you know, wasn't my people. So I really wanted to just create something where people of color, people from, you know, marginalized communities could tell their own stories from their perspective without having to explain it.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the best way to consume the content. As you know, when you read an article from someone who, let's say, is a Korean man, right, you're going to get something out of it and it's going to touch you more deeply than you know, if someone else had reported on that.
Yeah, the connection. You already feel yourself represented within it.
Yeah.
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 Did you, I mean, so much of our perspectives as, like, adults are informed by a lot of, like, our formative experiences as, like, children or even, like, formative years in college or university. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, growing up, like, what were some of the Asian influences you saw in popular media? And, you know, who did you look up to? And what kind of impact did that have on you and your perspective?
Mm-hmm. I didn't see very many people, right? I think the ones that I remember are London Tipton from The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody. Shout out to Brenda Song, love her. and that was a very characterized, like, kind of ditzy type of character. Mm-hmm. Lane Kim in Gilmore Girls, which was very much like the stereotypical nerdy Asian, super religious, awkward. And then dragon ladies, over-sexualized people, Asian women, to be specific. So I think that not seeing Asians portrayed in an accurate light or a very stereotypical perspective, combined with growing up in a very, very white town where I was one of the very few Asians at the time in high school and elementary school, really made me have a lot of internalized racism and really made me feel embarrassed or ashamed to be Asian and really wanted, it really made me want to reject my own culture. So I think, you know, again, I always say, and it sounds very dramatic, but Crazy Rich Asians changed my life because I think that was the first time I really was like, oh, we are seeing Asians being celebrated. We are seeing hot Asian men on screen instead of these like nerdy, never gets the girl type of guys. We are seeing these women who are, you know, it still is a very specific type of Asian and Crazy Rich Asians, but it was just a more positive experience and a more positive reflection of, you know, this community than I was used to seeing. So I remember seeing the movie, and it was Simu Liu and Andrew Fung when Simu was still on Kim's Convenience, and they put out on Twitter, they were like, hey, everyone, let's just, like, buy out the theater at Yonge and Dundas and, like, all go together and watch Crazy Rich Asians together. So I got a ticket, and, like, being in that theater with a bunch of Asians, we were all laughing at the same things. We were all crying at the same things. It was the most amazing experience. And I remember going home being like, wow, I'm so effing proud to be Asian. I don't remember the last time or when I've ever said that or felt that way. So I think from there, my perspective really shifted, and I really recognized, wow, the power of representation is so impactful. Because if just a movie like that, one movie could do that to me and led me to kind of like build a platform, like imagine what having that regularly can do. Imagine how, you know, younger people who are feeling isolated, who feel like they don't belong, who feel like they are othered, how they would feel if they had that positive stuff. Or not even positive, but accurate portrayals of who they are.
Right. The diversity of portrayals, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I have a kind of like a... My experience growing up was the people that I saw represented in media were either like... If it was like in cartoons, like Dragon Ball Z or something like that. Or literally Jackie Chan and Jet Li, which they're... I mean, Jackie Chan's, I think, come out as being a little bit problematic in a few ways. But those were the manifestations of the community that the communities that I was in in media, which were very hyper masculine and not a part of the identity that I by any means felt like I could kind of draw myself towards. Right. And so when you don't see yourself, or when you don't see like a diversity of perspectives and a diversity of representations represented in media, it kind of makes you feel like there's a cap on what you can aspire to be because you've not seen those success stories out there. And so, like, for me growing up, if I only saw these hyper-masculine, literally martial artists on screen, and I did not identify as a martial artist, then I'm like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm not going to aspire to pursue anything in culture in that way because I have not seen myself represented. Mm-hmm. So I think that is definitely... Fortunately, I think that's changed a lot since then, right? And obviously with what we're seeing on screen, you know, we're seeing big records being made, or I guess big moments, you know, I guess it's a little bit better later than never, but like the Emmys, that was a lot of big milestones there. Michelle Yeoh winning at the Oscars. Like we're seeing a lot of improvement being made, but it is like a real thing of, you know, people, a real experience of people growing up. And also like internalized racism is like no joke and a real thing that I think a lot of people experience and have to do the work to really like unpack as they grow up for sure. It's not easy.
And I think through this platform too, like, you know, I started out Represent Asian Project being celebrating, advocating, elevating Asian representation in media and beyond. But I wanted to kind of shift that to being, you know, it's more so of a community. We're not just celebrating representation, but, you know, stuff we care about, stuff that's important, important issues within our community, like internalized racism, like racism towards other communities, and stuff that we don't typically talk about because we've never been given a space or the language or the tools to do that. So I think having those constructive conversations within the community is so important because these are important issues that we need to discuss and we need to learn more about and that we need to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned growing up in a small town. Like, where did you grow up?
Whippy, Ontario. Yeah. The nickname was White Bee back then, or Shit Bee. So that'll give you an indication of what it was like.
Well, I was just about to say, like, you know, did you, you didn't see yourself represented in media, but did you ever see yourself represented in your own community that you were in as well?
No, there were barely any Asians, like I said, and most of my family was also overseas. So I really didn't see anyone who looked like me other than, like, my mom and then the other, like, random, not random, but the other Asian kids in school. And even, you know, in high school, I'll never forget, people would kind of pull me over to the other Asian guys and be like, okay, you guys should meet and you guys should date. And I'm like, okay, right? Just because we're Asian, sure. So it was a very interesting experience, to say the least.
So you think that, like, around Crazy Rich Asians, like, that timeline and when you created your platform was a little bit of a turning point for you in terms of your own, like, self identity and actualization as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think growing older too and just, you know, spending more time with my relatives and learning more about my family history and everything, I think that also helped. But that Crazy Rich Asians was a really defining moment for me.
I remember growing going on a family trip to the motherland in Korea when I was really young and then another time when I was an adult. And the difference between those two trips were the first time I went, I, like, felt I didn't have that much interest about exploring my own culture, my own roots. I didn't have that much enthusiasm over it. And everything felt foreign. Everything felt so, like, other, even though it was literally, like, my people. And then my second trip, or, like, my trip when I went as an adult was the complete opposite, where there was such a, I almost feel like there was, like, also, like, a little bit of guilt of only coming to that that realization later on in life to want to explore your roots and your culture as an adult and not having made up that or not using the time beforehand to appreciate your culture as well. But to me, it's a very stark difference between adulthood and childhood of, like, exploring your roots and where you come from and your people and your community and culture.
Yeah, I mean, I think I went to Beijing when I was 8 or 9. And I didn't like it. I was like, I want to go home. I don't like this. I don't want this food. Anytime we would go for Chinese food, I'd be like, I don't want to go. Anytime my dad would take us to, like, the Chinese grocery store, I'm like, it's stinky. I don't want to be there. And I'm like, I only want Asian food. I only want to go to the Asian grocery store. So it's true, like, you know, when you're younger, and especially I think when we grew up in the time that we did, there is such a, for a lot of people, rejection of that culture. And as we get older, what I hope is that more people, you know, have started to embrace it.
Yeah, and so much of your work now that you're doing with Represent Asian, you're really giving, one, celebrating and showcasing a lot of the talent that we have in the community, but also, like, the diversity of stories, and not everything is necessarily a story on success, because we know that there is a diversity of perspectives and experiences that are within the Asian community too. Within the 5 years that you've since you started it, would you say that the goal has changed or the goalposts have changed since day one to current day today?
Yeah, I think, you know, from day one it was very much positive, uplifting content, and And, you know, people used to say that all the time. They'd be like, wow, and you always post, like, great positive stuff. And I see the value in that, but I think there's also importance in posting the stuff that's a bit more difficult and the stuff that is really important that, like I said before, we do need to talk about and we should be discussing within our communities and with other communities. So I think that definitely shifted there in terms of, you know, we want to make it more well-rounded content as opposed to just, yay, Asian representation is going to save us. Because yeah. It's not just that. And I think we've realized that, you know, representation is very, very important, but it's not the thing that's going to save us, or it's not the be-all or end-all to get us to a better place. It's just a stepping stone.
Yeah, and obviously there's a lot of work that needs to be done with the communities outside of the Asian community in terms of supporting just BIPOC communities in general, but also a lot of work that needs to be done within our own communities too,
because there is a lot of, like, internal, like, racism to other Asian communities. Like, a lot of problems that we have not, as a culture and a community, I feel like, forced ourselves to confront, you know, as much in the past as we are trying to today.
Even colorism within the community, right? Yeah. Like, I think you and I, we are paler skinned, so we have more privilege than maybe someone who is Filipino, someone who is Cambodian. I've literally had friends before who, you know, they've dated someone from a Southeast Asian, like, of Southeast Asian background, and their parents have told them, like, oh, it's a shame that he's so dark. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what? Like, you know what I mean? So it's those types of things. Like, that's the type of stuff that I want to encourage the community to, and not to be judgmental of themselves, right? Because this is kind of what we've learned growing up. Little things, too, like if we think about how the Asian community has been so historically racist against the Black community, right? I remember driving, you know, Jane and Finch, parents sees a Black person, they immediately lock the doors of the car. Those little things have, like, taught us to think, oh, that person is dangerous, that person is bad. So I think we have to really, you know, unlearn, not to use a stereotypical term, but unlearn all of those things and really, you know, take into account how important it is for BIPOC communities to work together and to be in solidarity with each other and to support each other and to uplift each other.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I also want to go back to the point of, you know, the importance of obviously showcasing our stories of success, but that not being the only narrative, because as we all know, the model minority myth is, you know, can be very harmful and often paints the Asian community as universally successful, highly educated, higher incomes, et cetera, et cetera. And so how does that make the part of our community that don't fall into those categories feel? And so, and also, how does that kind of create this kind of perception that Asians don't face systemic barriers or do not require the supports to break down those barriers too? How do you navigate those kind of misconceptions while really advocating for better representation through the stories you're telling and the work that you're doing?
I mean, I'll be honest, it's hard because when you're building an audience, right, what is the stuff that is going to get engagement? What is the stuff that is going to click? What is the stuff that's going to sell? It's the flashy celebrity, you know, success stories. So I think my kind of strategy is to, yes, we build the audience by doing those types of stories, but we are also incorporating other stories of people who, you know, grew up with no money and who had to face all sorts of barriers to create their own business, to, you know, incredible entrepreneurship stories. I think that's really important to highlight as well.
are there any stories that you've worked on throughout the 5 years that have really stuck out to you and, like, really either from, like, reader feedback or things that you really felt like, yeah, this is the reason why I'm doing this, and this story really speaks to the overall mission and purpose of everything that I'm working on.
I mean, a fun one that comes to mind is we did a feature on a 70-year-old Chinese woman who goes by the name of Posey Galore, and she writes X-rated haikus. And and I think it's so interesting because, you know, we don't see a lot of Asian women owning their sexuality. Like, they are often sexualized by the other, by the white male gaze. And so for her to kind of take it into her own hands, and she published this like tiny book of haikus called High Screw. And it's just like the most amazing thing. And she's just so unapologetic about her sexuality. And I was like, wow, that is like the epitome of like a badass Asian woman to me, you know, like who owns it. So I think that's important. I think other stuff that has really hit is just that solidarity piece with other communities. Mm. I think being able to help people within our community understand the importance of that has been really impactful to me personally, because I think that's also a journey that I've had to go on myself personally. So those are the two that come to mind right now. I'm sure there are many more, but my brain is not there right now.
Obviously, you know, it's a platform that you've built that has given you a lot of purpose, and but it's also a lot of work just to run a media business in general. Like a small media business is a lot of work, right? But what's your perspective on, in terms of, you know, your platform creating opportunities for other Asian creators, leaders, voices and perspectives? How does that influence your decision-making within, you know, what you guys decide to cover, as well as what kind of talent you decide to work with as well?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I try to make it a point to keep it within, you know, at first I really was like, I want to keep it within the Asian community and just give Asian people the opportunity, whether it's a videographer, an editor, a photographer, a writer, etc. But I've actually kind of shifted, and I'm like, I think it might make sense too to open it up to other people within the BIPOC community, because I think that's kind of like the show of solidarity, where it's like, we should all be working together to lift each other up. It doesn't have to be just the Asians in one place, the Black people in another place. Yes. You know, it can be something that we mix together. But in terms of, I mean, that's the dream with this platform and with this this company. It feels weird to me. I still don't consider myself an entrepreneur, which is like, and everyone's like, yes, you are. Like, you've built a business. And I think because I'm like, no, I'm a journalist, or I'm this, or I'm that, it's very difficult for me to call myself an entrepreneur and to be like, whoa, yes, I actually built a business, because I just feel like I'm so, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I just kind of go with the flow.
I feel like that is a key trait of being an entrepreneur, knowing your next step.
Okay, cool.
Going with the flow. Kind of,
But that is the dream, is like, yes, I want to build this out to be a sustainable business where I can hire people who maybe don't get the opportunities to be hired. I can pay people the rate that they deserve to be paid, whereas other publications might pay them less because they are from a specific community, or because they are a woman, or this or that, right? Mm-hmm. So that's my goal, is to create these opportunities and to allow other people a place to share their stories, their voices, their opinions.
Yeah, I know, I love that. And I think to your point of, you know, opening up your decision making around who to hire as like talent or videographers or writers or voices to just the general BIPOC community speaks to just your bigger picture that you're talking about of bridging those, or creating bridges between communities. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point, is to not silo ourselves and to kind of have this high tides lift all boats kind of perspective, right?
Yeah, because I think what I noticed too within the Asian community, especially in the States, is that I think a lot of us grew up as being the outsiders, so we wanted to kind of create our own cool kids club, but we're still excluding a lot of people from that. And, you know, if you're not of a certain caliber or have a certain job or this or that, you might not make it into that cool kids club. So I want to kind of break that and be like, no, let's, you know, it reminds me of the Mean Girls quote. It's like, what? I just wish I could bake a cake of rainbows and smiles and we could all get along.
Exactly. I do find it interesting, you know, your point that you mentioned about not considering yourself immediately as an entrepreneur, because so many of our interviews that we do with people that are everyone from literally like startup entrepreneur or startup founders to media entrepreneurs to literally drag queens will be like, yeah, I guess I never, we'll ask them, like, what do you consider to be, like, or why do you consider yourself to be an entrepreneur? They're like, oh, I didn't even think myself as an entrepreneur, because it just didn't occur to them that they are, like,
managing their own business, like managing opportunities, creating teams, hiring teams. And that is literally, truly like the spirit of entrepreneurship too, right? And it's just so great to see that these opportunities and businesses, people are able to realize their visions and build up a business and a foundation at the same time.
That makes me feel better that I'm not the only one.
More often than not. So you're not the only one. You're not, you know, everyone's in the same boat. What kind of, you know, as you've built up Represent Asian, you've built up like a really engaged, passionate audience and community. What do you think has been the key to really building that connection with your audience?
Knowing your audience. Like, my audience is me, basically. I don't think I have, you know, people are like, how do you do it? What's your strategy? And I'm like, kind of just go with the flow, right? Like, I can pinpoint, okay, what is the stuff that genuinely excites me? How would I tell this story in a way that would make other people interested? Like, if I were to just learn about this piece of news, see one of my friends and tell them, relay that information to them, how would I be saying it? And I kind of take it from that perspective of, you know, yeah, we are a community of friends, of peers, and I want to just kind of share exciting things or important things that I learn about with them.
Have you ever created like kind of like a bucket list or a dream list of like, you know, either actors or business leaders or people within the community that you like really love to work with and like found yourself kind of like crossing off that list? Who is on that list?
Oh man, who was on that list? I think when I first started, like I was like, I wanted to do a bunch of profiles on people. So a backstory too, you know, when I first started Represent Asian, it was before the website launched the day COVID was declared a pandemic.
Oh wow, that is a timestamp.
Yes. So I believe it was March 11th, 2020. And the original idea was, you know, a beautiful website with interviews and photography, like original photography and videos. And then the pandemic hit and I was like, well, shit, what are we going to do now? Because there are more, literally more important things to care about. And then it shifted to, well, also shit. Can I swear?
Yes.
Well, also shit. We had just started to, as an Asian community, get people to like see us in a good light. And now everyone hates us.
Yes.
So it was a very interesting thing. And because of the pandemic, because of limitations to, you know, going out and interviewing people and taking their photographs and taking video of them, I switched to social. And it actually ended up being a really great thing because at that time, Asians needed community. And it just kind of grew from there. So the social stuff grew from there. In terms of people that I wanted to interview, my brain, my memory is so bad right now. I know there are people. I mean, Priyanka was one, just because Priyanka and I went to high school together.
Oh my gosh.
And I was, it was so interesting to see because she is exactly the same as she was in high school. And I recently interviewed her and I was like, I've been wanting to do this interview with you because you're going around and telling everyone, all the interviews you're doing, you're saying like, I was exactly the same in high school. And I'm like, I have literal video proof of you being exactly the same, right? So that was a really cool one to do.
Operates at like 120% energy. Yes. We did a shoot with her once and I was like, it was a really early morning shoot and she came in as if she had like 5 coffees and it was just like, and I think that's just like a natural energy.
She's a
and I
was star.
Like, oh my gosh, it really takes something different to be at the operating at that level because I would burn out so fast.
She has always been a star. Like, again, we would be at our friend's house and she was like dancing to the Pussycat Dolls, doing all the choreography at like when I was maybe in grade 12 and she was in grade 10. So that was one. Some big founders, like the founders of Glow Recipe was a big one. I thought that was really, really cool to interview them. Some great interviews that we've had have been with Margaret Cho, Bowen Yang, the writers of Joyride. Yeah, there's been some really, really cool experiences.
I love that. And so when you're, you know, putting your content together, you know, thinking about
or I don't know if you guys are if there's like a, you know, big strategy meetings or anything like that, but like how are you measuring and determining and defining success for yourselves?
Right now, getting through the day, getting through the week.
Truly.
I don't know. I guess success, like metrics obviously play a huge role. And yeah, I mean, I get those highs when you see a post start to go viral, mm-hmm. right? Like that's always a great experience. Especially when it's like, you know, there's always like the fun stuff from award shows and everything that'll go viral. But especially if it's, you know, meaningful, important things too, and to see that that resonates with our audience is really, really great. But measuring success, I mean, I don't know. I guess this is the part where, again, I'm like, I don't know if I'm a true entrepreneur or business person because I kind of just go day by day. I have general ideas of like, yes, I know what I want to do next and I know what I want to build out and like bigger picture. But in terms of the steps, it's kind of like, let's see kind of what happens day by day and what we can do from here. Just because yeah. all of us, my whole team, we're all working a million other jobs too, so none of us are really fully dedicated to this.
Which is so impressive, considering how much of a platform you've built up.
Thank you.
And the other thing too is that, like, I think when it comes to entrepreneurship, if you have like, I mean, maybe there are individuals who have a very clear, defined goal of and a roadmap to like. They're at point A and I want to get to point B by the end of like my 10-year kind of plan, and like that's the plan. But I feel like 99% of the time, the goals that you set and the goalposts that you set for yourself within the first month, the first year, like they are constantly evolving and your perspective is constantly evolving. Mm-hmm. And it's good that that happens. And mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing to be not be too prescriptive or not have the strict kind of like 10 commandments of like your goals of like mm-hmm. what you need to define, because as people we're changing, as communities we're changing, as like a culture we're changing. And so I'm sure that like the landscape when you started representation is different than it is today. And yeah. so like that would probably reflect kind of like the goals and your audience and everything as well too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
we're working with Monogram to create a series of profiles, with yourself included, that celebrates Asian success stories.
Love that.
What does momentum mean to you in terms of pushing forward and progress and impact as a community or as a culture? And not necessarily like the Asian culture, but just our culture and our discourse in general.
What does momentum mean to
me? Yeah, how are you defining that, or how would you define that?
It's a good question. I think it's just putting in as much effort as you have the capacity for on any given day and not giving up. I mean, there's so many times, Lance, where I'm like, what am I doing this for? I work so hard. I'm tired. This is like, I'm not making enough money for this. Is this going to grow? You know, I think we were at a point when people really, really wanted to support the Asian community, just like people really wanted to support Black Lives Matter and support the Black community, and then it kind of like dwindles off, right? And there's a lot of times where I'm like, what am I doing this for? But then when people come up to me or they message and they say, wow, what you're doing is so important, or I feel so seen by this, or I learned so much from you, or it really makes me think differently about things, that's where I'm like, okay, this is why I do it. Despite like how many tears shed and, you know, how much money spent and how many meltdowns that I've had, it's like that's what makes it worth it. And in order to keep that going, again, I just have to put in as much effort as I can each day to keep it going.
Yeah, yeah. That is a great model to live by. And I know we just talked about not being too prescriptive about goals, but do you have a North Star for yourself for like the next like 5 or 10 years? And like, what's like the big, big thing or big goal or something that you really would love to just get to or work towards?
So let's put the manifestations out there.
Yes, the energy out of the universe. The energy out of here.
I mean, I would love Representation Project to be its own, you know, sustainable media publication. That's kind of like the gold standard of what people would go to for matters concerning the Asian diaspora. I would also love to create a production company because I think that helping brands tell stories from our perspective is really important. And I would love to be able to, you know, hire and curate the right type of people to do that and assist bigger brands who, you know, want to cater to those communities to do that as well.
Mm-hmm. And when you say media publication, like, what, how are you defining that now? Because that could be anything from someone literally with a social media profile to, like, the whole shebang. So for you...
The whole shebang. Website, YouTube, social media, all of it. Maybe a TV show someday. Something like that. Yeah.
I love that. And I honestly, I feel like I can absolutely see that happening for you. See just the amount of projects that would have your influence and perspective on it, and that would make, you know, our community just so much better and feel so much more seen too.
Thank you.
Last question that I usually end off with is, and we've kind of talked about it, you know, overarching throughout the interview, but what at the end of the day is your mission and purpose for yourself, but also as the owner and founder of Representation?
I think my personal mission, which kind of bleeds into all the work that I do, is supporting my community. So whether that's through Represent Asian Project, whether that's through, you know, our nonprofit arm to support Asian mental health, whether that's through my work as a psychotherapist, whether that's, you know, just working with people in different areas of life, it's always with that thing of uplifting and supporting my community and helping them feel seen, because I didn't feel seen when I was younger. I didn't feel heard when I was younger. I didn't feel like I was allowed to have a voice, and it took me a long time to find my voice. And so I just hope that I can inspire other people to do the same.
I love that. Thanks, Madeline.
Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you left a review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you liked, who you'd like to see on the show, and anything else you want to share. To keep up to date, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Until next time, ask yourself, what's your mission?